Greetings, this is the Automatically Deleted Husband. I'm calling a couple hours early tonight simply because of I have guests coming in a couple hours. And I can assume that, you know, it's not that, you know, for a short while, it was clear that it was manually deleted or sent to voicemail when I would call. But now for, well, years, it's automatic, you know, automatically blocked. So it's kind of like, I can call anytime, right? Call 2 a.m., not a problem. But anyway, you know, normally the Lord does make this issue about taking a day of rest. And in the Protestant community, it's typically Sunday. There is some part of the Protestant community that does Saturday. What I've done over the last many months has been actually taking Saturday because I visit people. And, you know, that's the important thing. I don't visit an institution, I visit people. And the Saturdays have been the days that those people were available. So to work with them, I said, okay, I'm gonna use that Saturday to see them. But this week, it's going to be Thursday today, simply because that's has been my focus all day. So I haven't done a bit of work today, and don't plan to. Again, in a couple hours, I anticipate a couple of visitors. But, you know, and of course, consistent with a day of rest, I did an 8-mile aggressive walk today. You know, that's normal. I just think that's restful, isn't it? And I found when I got back, for some strange reason, I was unusually tired. Physically tired. But that only lasted for an hour, so I'm fine now. But still, it was kind of like, gee, why would 8 miles make you tired? Because, you know, it used to be I would do 12 without a problem. And today I did 8, and I was tired. It's kind of like, that shouldn't be. I think part of the problem, I think twofold. One is cooler weather. Two is I have been doing the long walks as much. Most of my walks, the longer walks, have been 7 miles. So 8's only a little bit longer. But it used to be at least once or twice a week I would do 12 miles. And I haven't in a while. And I do think it's the lack of doing it that's the problem. But back in July, I had a really serious exchange with my friend in Utah, because I read from the Pearl of Great Price, it has, you know, within it the sub-books like the Bible does. And there's the Book of Moses and the Book of Abraham. And I read them because, again, they're fairly short. And I gave him a list of questions. And I say, here's what seems to be inconsistencies. There were some other issues and whatnot. And I listed them. And it wasn't, you idiot, don't you see the fallacy here? But no, there seems to be a problem here. What is the response? Because my assumption was they had a response. You know, it's kind of like, you don't come with the attitude you're an idiot, but you come with the attitude, well, here is something that seems obvious, especially obvious to somebody familiar with the field, that you probably have an answer for. So I posed the question with the anticipation they had an answer for it. And to my joy, for most of it, they did have an answer. Whether the answer is satisfying is a different question. But at least it was taken as, you know, and one of the things we talked about, because it's the idea of iron sharpens iron, one man sharpens, sharpens another. We kept going back to hear the clanging because it was a joy. It was a mutually shared joy to engage in this. And it was a delight. And we went back and forth. And I don't think neither one of us were satisfied, but there was a distraction and we haven't been back to it. But I sat down and read that, because it wasn't short. I mean, it was probably 5-6 pages or more. Even without the, you know, without all the email salutations and whatnot, it's probably 5 or 6 pages. And it was serious depth. A lot of scripture was used. And again, out of respect for him, I quoted King James. Because I'm not trying to say, well, if you use King James, you're so out of date. No, not at all. King James is a perfectly reasonable translation. There are issues. You know, there's the uncomfortableness with using language that we don't use much today. Well, it's kind of like the thing I did yesterday when I went to see you mouth to mouth, as opposed to what we would say is face to face. But the Greek is mouth to mouth because the vernacular has changed. But the words indeed are mouth to mouth. You know, in the King James, it's Samuel or Chronicles or somewhere. Where what you see in ESV, NASB, and whatnot, when a man, and in the King James, it's something like, he who pisseth against the wall. And it's kind of like, well, that's a vernacular we would find kind of uncomfortable, at least. But that's what it says. That's what it says in the Hebrew. Someone who urinates against the wall. You know, and the distinction there is that's what men do, women don't. You know, I mean, anyway, but it's there. In a sense, King James gets it right where the NASB and the ESV don't, which I find fascinating. Anyway, it's fascinating. But so, I was encouraged by, because I read that email exchange. I wrote him just 30 minutes ago, said, you know, this was great, and I think it sets a great model for two men without the same foundation to rationally engage each other. And I asked if I could share that with these guys tonight. And within minutes, I got a response. Yes, go ahead. Because that's important. If, for example, a Muslim were to come to me and give me a serious challenge to the veracity of Scripture, and we went back and forth on that, I would love to do that respectfully with a Muslim and then be able to share that. Because I want other followers of Christ not to say, oh, I'm going to run scared because he's asking questions he shouldn't ask because we're right and he's wrong. That's not the way to respond. That is not the way to respond. You stand on the truth, but you do so with grace. And as I pointed out to my friend Chris, we stand with, you know, on grace, seasoned with salt, and I use pink salt. But anyway, and the other thing, because I mentioned it, Chris, because I look back some of the things, and you know, the obvious example with Chris and I, because we were both politically active, and we both have repented for fairly similar reasons. You know, fundamentally, the same reason, because we see in Scripture, we're not called to do that. We reviewed this chapter from the book Christian Anarchy, which is well written, because there's a chapter that discussed Romans 13, and we a few days ago over the weekend we reviewed that, and it's kind of like this was well written, well reasoned, except there were a couple of areas we said no. I think he's got that right. He's explained that well, and they blew it right there. But you know. As if we haven't. But, you know, there were a couple of areas that we would disagree on. And unfortunately, we can't engage this guy anymore because he died, 10 years ago or whatever. But I do wonder if he would be an interesting person, would have been an interesting person to engage in dialogue. Because, anyway, you know, some people can explain things a whole lot clearer than I do. But anyway, and I think he did and had some great insights. So, you know, I've already spent, I read a good bit, including a lot of the intro stuff and the first chapter of the Book of Mormon today. And I think I'm going to read at least one more chapter before they arrive, because Well, two reasons. One is to have a clear understanding of their position, and two, to show them respect, saying, I didn't just wait for you to come and say, good luck. No, I invested my time so I could engage you, not to do the philonikos, not to be contentious, not to defeat you, but as an act of love to engage you. And so I am really encouraged that this may indeed transpire in the next, well, it's just after four, in about 2 hours. And I want to reflect Christ well in doing this. And as I described yesterday, I feel confident I'm doing the right thing. And I think about what it's going to be like for these guys. I remember because with my family we went to the church in Athens, Christian Covenant. Yeah, Christian Covenant. And went there a few times, and there was a guest speaker once, and he talked about Islam. And I did ask him a question afterwards. And what I sensed in that was, these people are bad, and we got to proclaim Christ. And it's kind of like, I really felt, I don't want to be that way. And then, of course, I read the Quran, because at that time I hadn't. And I think the people who subscribe to the Quran are wrong. But they're people. And it's not loving on my part to condemn them in my heart. I would suggest the people subscribe to this book, the book that I actually have now in hand, are subscribing to a fallacy. And I will unambiguously say that. But I won't run from them. I won't call them names. I will engage them. And with my one gentleman, call him a good friend. I would like to end this evening with potentially one or two new good friends. Even if neither one of us, none of the three of us change our mind on anything, but we'll be enlightened, hopefully. At the same time, what would it be like? Can you imagine being a young guy? I think they're in their, let's say 20. Can you imagine being somebody like that? Being away from home, trying to encourage people on what you believe, and somebody challenges you, not by belittling you, but by trying to rationally engage you on the fallacy of what you stand on. What is it going to be like for them? And even more, what it will be like if one of them says, now or years from now, oh, I am standing on a fallacy. Jesus Christ is not the Jesus Christ described in the Book of Mormon, but he's my creator, as described in the Bible. And the people around him don't subscribe to that. What is that going to do to that person? What kind of courage will it take? What kind of price may he pay? May I suggest there is a video that was done by a gentleman who could have been. It was done on April 11th of this year, titled Introduction. Reconciliation introduction. Paying the costs of being reconciled to Christ and each other. It's my first of the 9 videos I did, part of this introduction series. That is what one of these gentlemen, or both, may be looking forward to in the not-too-distant future, or in the distant future. Because he becomes, as the, you know, the term I use in the videos, a whistleblower. Because he points out, look, hey, what we're standing on, what we're doing, is wrong. And the price you pay for that is huge. It takes God's grace to live through it and survive. And this is what the challenge I'll be setting in front of these gentlemen in a couple hours, Lord willing. You know, I won't have to put it in those terms, but that is the reality. I'm not playing, as I described to Chris. I'm not playing a game. I'm not trying to win a battle. I'm trying to do an act of love. Considering those 9 videos, and they're addressed to extended family, immediate family, institutional church leadership, they won't do that, will they? Well, I mean, they haven't for 10 years. Why would I expect them to change? I still hope one of them at least does and reconciles with me. It's difficult, isn't it? So, you know, the PCA doesn't want to do that. Can you imagine what would happen if a young Mormon gentleman suddenly changes? What kind of cost will he pay? One gentleman lives in Arizona, one in Utah, in Salt Lake City. There is a group, what I'm aware of, because I've seen a couple of their presentations. There is a church in Salt Lake City who's very much focused on reaching out to the Mormon community, because they're rather well known there. And apparently made up of a large number of them are former Mormons. Because in a very real sense, it's reaching out to the woman who's had an abortion. It's reaching out, as you know, my race, the Willabend Farms, reaching out to women who were sex slaves here in Cleveland. You have to deal with somebody with grace. And the way you deal with a woman who has had an abortion versus a woman who's been a sex slave versus someone who's been involved in the Mormon faith versus someone, you know, I think about if a couple of these guys, Ryan and Chris, who are members of MTOI, Messianic Temple Torah Observing Israel. They're a cult. Can you imagine if we engaged each other one day, or they engaged somebody else, doesn't require me, and they said, you know, my family's involved here, we've been active in it, I bought it, and I find I'm wrong. You need to offer grace. I think the reason I had such a good relationship with Lynn and Gary, because their lifestyles was a little different than mine. Because I didn't condemn them. I think the reason I have a relationship with Mike, the former cocaine dealer, because I didn't condemn him. And I think the reason I can engage my Mormon friend in Utah seriously is I don't condemn him, but lovingly say I think he's wrong and be willing to accept him telling me he thinks I'm wrong. It's been hard to get to be that way, but I think that's what a follower of Christ, I think that's what you're supposed to do when you become older. See, is there a Greek word for that? Oh yeah, presbyteros, when somebody is older, because he has matured, grown closer to perfection or completeness. Seems that that's a duty, not an office. And then he's called to, you know, dig into something, dig into scopos, and do that with others. So it would be episkopos. Yeah, that's maybe what it is. And so what you would do is you would visit issues and people. That seems to make sense. I wonder if somebody's ever said that before. Oh, yes. That would have been the Apostle Paul. And Ezekiel. And anyway. I was going to do something really short because I have visitors coming. Anyway, I have visitors coming and I want to read at least one more chapter. Otherwise, I'm prepared and I pray to be a blessing. And I pray to set the model for somebody in the PCA to follow. For someone in my extended family to follow. Like, oh, I don't know, Jim Cross. Render Keynes, who's also part of my extended family. My wife. My kids. Dorothy Jane, remember the guy who used to spend hours upon hours upon hours, invest time and money into the pregnancy care center, offering grace? Remember that model that I tried to live? I'm still living it. You're offering me no grace whatsoever, none whatsoever. The cards behind me demonstrate that. And I did send another birthday card to you today. My lady, my wife, you want a model of someone trying to love? Look at your husband. My lady, I love you and I want you back.